words appear. The email addresses and groups mentioned in this program are no longer available. The Blind Handyman group does exist in its new incarnation on groups.io. To join, send a blank email to blindhandyman+subscribe@groups.io. That's blindhandyman+subscribe@groups.io. Alternatively, you can join our Blind Handyman Facebook group. Links will be in the description box below.
Recorded at the Little Ranch House right here in Lufkin, Texas on Southwood Drive. For the next hour, we're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining, all designed, of course, with the blind in mind. Here are the hosts for the Blind Handyman, Don Shaw.
Tom Houston, what's the good word today, man?
Don Pepper, I guess. Don Patterson's here.
Yeah, how come you always call him first? I don't understand that. And I don't know.
Well, Phil wrote this script.
Question the creator. Goodness.
We
do have special guests today, but Phil, the creator, will introduce the special guest. My name is Tom Houston, but right now, ladies and gentlemen, the creator, the producer of Blind Handyman, here's Phil Paul.
Wonderful. Howdy. How's everybody? This radio didn't really work that good, but I gave Dale the good one.
That's right.
Crappy radio, and Kevin got the good earphones, and here I am just on third base.
10-1, they won't make it through the whole show.
What a deal. You think you'll switch them off? Well, we've had both these gentlemen as guests on our show. I think we've had Kevin twice, haven't we?
Yes, sir.
How the hell do we do that? Kevin twice. Kevin Doucet from Prattville, Alabama, is that right?
It is.
Prattville, Alabama is here with us, and Dale Campbell from Clear Lake City, Houston is here with us, Dale.
That's right.
We have these gentlemen, and we've had them in tow since Sunday. And
anyone knows the whereabouts of their wives, would you please have one of them call us?
That's
please
the question.
I'd like to mention that at my age, it's difficult to have to drink this much. They're about to kill me.
We have drank a drink or two, haven't we?
What did Patterson, our boy Don Patterson, so far has gotten the one-liner of the weekend? He was railing about how he wears the britches. He's, of course, y'all know that Pat just got married. I guess everybody knows that, right? He's been married.
Right.
This is 2 weeks.
Our anniversary was yesterday.
You celebrated
today. He stayed
today,
with us.
Actually.
And you hung with us.
Yeah, I hung with y'all. I mean, what a guy.
Patterson was, let's put this nicely, Patterson was drifting into the bay about, let's just to put it nicely, last night at about 8:30, we were cooking burgers and trying to eat supper. He hadn't eaten yet because he didn't want to kill that good buzz he had going. And so he called his wife to come get him. I didn't hear the conversation. When he got off the phone, he was railing to Dale and Kevin and somebody else about, do you see how I told her to come get me? I wear the britches in my family. She drove up and he said, forget everything I said, and ran out the door.
It was
obviously, you haven't met his wife, but I guarantee you, he don't wear the pants in his family. She may let him try them on occasionally, but that'd be about as far as it would go.
I guarantee.
Now, Dale, you are a married fella. You've only been married a couple months. Is that right?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, tomorrow's our two-month anniversary.
2 months you've been...
And he's spent it with us.
kind of spending it with us. Is our...
What a deal, man. I believe it is.
Let me turn this off, young. Y'all ad-libbed this.
Uh-huh, okay. But, yeah, Dale, what a deal, man.
2 months anniversary, all these
two newly... 2 months.
Newly married guys, married to Candace, and Candace is a school teacher, you said, didn't you?
Yes, yes.
Teaches
first grade, ESL.
First
English
grade.
Is a second language.
Is that right?
Yes.
Really? So she's quite fluent in Spanish.
No.
No.
But the kids
no.
Her students are.
But the kids don't know that.
By the end of the school year, the kids are definitely speaking English.
Do you speak Spanish any at all?
I know a few words. I can get my face slapped, find the door, and get another beer.
Yeah. Well, that's about all
that's
the guy needs.
That's the three most important things in life, right?
No kid.
Yes.
I think I can do that in most any language.
Well, I'm fluent in Spanish.
No, I bet you are.
Refried beans.
That'd be about it. Bean nachos.
Jalapeno peppers.
Yeah. But she doesn't know Spanish, but she teaches English as a second language. Now, I don't see how she would.
All of her students, English is their second language. Spanish is spoken predominantly at home.
Mm-hmm.
So when they come in, they have a little barrier there of learning English.
So, but she knows English quite well, so she's teaching.
Yeah, she has a master's degree, pulled a 4.0.
Has a master's degree.
We don't play Jeopardy together because I'm always losing.
She's a very attractive lady, but she's smart too.
Yes.
But I don't know what to do. Well, how smart could she be? She married him.
I was going to say, it must have been a moment of weakness on her
very
part
weak,
when
right?
she.
Well, I don't play trivia with my wife either because I'll play, but we always play teams because I get too embarrassed. And my second wife was even better than that. Oh, don't say that, Phil. Mm. They can't let him hear this show. But Terry Lynn was just knocked out. She was good. And this my brother-in-law's wife, Shelley's, is better than either one of them. Anyway, and Kevin, you're a married guy. What does your wife do for a living? She
works for the state of Alabama Attorney General's office.
I love these working ones.
Yeah, what
gotta keep them working.
AG's office. That's really right. He's been on the phone. He's almost as bad as John Bennett about talking to his wife. How many times you call her a day? 3 or 4 times?
I've got to call her at least 3 times a day. Yeah.
3 times.
Making those phone calls, man.
That's good. Got those cell phones. And let's see, Kevin, you don't have a wood shop per se. You've got a few. You've started buying a few tools, all right?
Right. Yeah. I've got a wood carport.
Is that Kelsey?
I have all my tools that I just drag out to the carport and work
out. Take them out to the carport, so they let you do that. Mm-hmm. Dave, you actually have a designated half a garage, don't you?
Yes, I do. I get the garage as long as the car fits in at the end of the day.
That's what she told you. I get my half of the garage, but the car's got to fit in. And you have pretty extensive. Were you talking yesterday about you have some industrial type of tools in your?
Yeah, I sure do. I've got a pretty full wood shop. About the only thing I'm missing is a lathe. And maybe a shaper or something along that lines. But I've got the planer, joiner, radial arm saw, table saws, miter saws, drill presses. And it was tough fitting it all in that garage so that we could get the car in.
I bet it was.
Now, it's common knowledge that I think we talked about this on the air. You lost your sight in an automobile accident about 8 years ago, right?
Correct. Got ran off the freeway.
And were you into this woodwork stuff before?
Yeah, a little before, but of course before I could never afford all the cool tools, nor did I have the time to really go out and work with them.
Boy, this being blind has just been a boon.
For sure has. I mean, early retirement.
I'm surprised people ain't putting the eyes out just enjoying it. Man, I'll tell you.
And sitting here doing the blind handyman on top of that.
Man,
just keep getting better and better.
Life couldn't get no better than this now, could it?
What a deal.
And you've, I think you probably have built more stuff than the rest. Tell us about, you were talking about building some toys and I built a couple of picnic tables, but yeah, tell us about car that you built, a hauling, what was that you were talking about yesterday?
Oh,
barrel shaped?
The toy box.
Was it a toy box?
It's a toy box. It's shaped like a truck.
Rolling toy box.
Right.
Okay.
I use circle cutters to cut the wheels, like a 3 or 4 inch circle cutter to cut the wheels out, and attach those basically to a 3/4 inch piece of plywood is the bottom or the chassis of the truck.
Now you just attach them in the side, like with a nail through the middle of them.
Actually, I use a dowel.
Use a dowel.
Wow. Yeah, I use about a 3/8 inch dowel so that they'll spin if they need to.
Okay, but how did you keep them on? I mean, you've got a dowel. Looks like they would slip off the end of the dowel.
No, I used a smaller circle cutter and cut about a 1 inch diameter insert, if you will, or circle, and use that to glue onto the end of the dowel.
Okay, so they
so
can't
that
come
it actually caps it.
Okay, so we have a hole drilled in the side of this. Is it was it inch thick stock?
Yeah.
Holes drilled in the side, the dowel pushed in, and then a little circle on the end so the wheels can't come off.
Right.
Okay, we started there. Go ahead.
You glue that in, and the back or the toy box storage area of the truck is actually just a box with rails, much like an old watermelon truck or a cattle truck, so that the kid wants to climb up it, he can climb up and inside, whatever he wants to do. But the area back there is about 18 inches wide and 35 inches long.
So it's just a box sitting on top of this piece of plywood that's, or this piece of stock.
Right, and the box is basically frame pieces going up and down, and slats running horizontally, and it just frames out a box. Then for the back, I use some material and have a friend of mine stitch in some elastic so that you've got a back that will attach and come off so the kid can climb in and out, grab what toys they need to. The front, the cab area, looks like a cab, and it comes off. It actually doubles as a bench or a stool.
Really? And now how did you build it? What does it look like? Is it just a box or what is it?
Basically
what is
just
it?
A box, yeah. It's I've got a taper cut at the front of it to make it look like the windshield, where the windshield
So it kind of slants back a little
bit.
Yeah,
and the front is basically just as, if you will, a bookshelf with a tapered front on it. So when it's put in place, it looks like the cab of a truck.
But it comes off. How does it attach? Does it just sit on the front there, or does it?
Yeah, it just fits on and sits right over the front of the chassis.
Mm-hmm.
Fits down on top of it, pulls off, goes back on real easily. It doubles as storage for magazines, books, anything they want to slide into it.
So you put things in from the back, and then you set it on there.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And that's all there is to it.
Now this is, you say the kid could climb in it. How big did this thing end up?
The total length on it was 45 inches. From front to back. The stool itself is about 9 or 10 inches deep and about 12 to 15 inches tall. Nice thing is, depending on who you're making it for, you can vary the heights and the depths and things. So you can make it for toddlers, make it for kids that are a little bit older, and just, you know, paint it, stain it, however you want to do it. Just have fun with it.
45 inches, that's almost 4 feet. That's a pretty good size.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, the actual toy box area, the storage area, is about 18 inches wide, about 20 inches deep, and... yeah, front to back's 30 to 35 inches, depending on how you want to play with it.
So the kid could get up in there and lay down, really?
Yeah, sure could. Small child could get in and play, or that way the kid can crawl into the toy box also and play in there if he needs to.
Did you see one like this, or was this just?
I just started playing with
you
it.
You just
made a few designs. The tough part was putting, you know, cutting the cab, getting it to look like, you know, getting it to look like the cab of a truck.
And then
playing with it. And every time you build one, you think, hey, I can do this differently next time.
So because
you
tried this,
or let me try that.
The cab of the truck, you'd want that thing to come up and be straight for a little ways and then taper back. So you'd have to...
Right. So it comes up in the front flush, like a grill, you know, or the front end of the truck, and then tapers back where the windshield starts.
Where the windshield. So you had to...
About halfway. Cool. You can play with it. It doesn't matter. I mean, you know, it's not a fine art. You're having fun and playing with it.
That's where you need that minor box, compound minor box saw.
That's right.
And you have one of those. You also have a radial arm saw.
Yes.
And you have a table saw.
Yes.
Why would you need a radial arm saw and a table saw? Looks like one would do basically the same thing.
The table saw is a lot better for ripping, and I use it for exact cuts. The radial arm saw I use for rough cut. Whenever I start a project with large stock, long stock, I'll use the radial arm saw to do the rough cuts to cut everything down to a rough size, usually an inch, three-quarters of an inch or so within the actual finished size. And then machine everything down from there. Everything I buy is rough lumber.
Dale, what's the travel on your radial arm saw?
Radial arm saw, I can cut a piece up to 16 and an eighth deep.
Really?
Feet or inches?
Inches.
Inches.
I'm sorry.
Okay,
yes,
so
yes.
It would be good for like big posts or big... Or
yeah, it'll cut a 4x4. And then actually, it's about a little over 3.5 inches. Is the maximum thickness of a piece of wood.
Okay.
Now, the 16 and a quarter inch is a piece of 3/4 inch plywood.
Right.
That I can cut that size. But the one thing I don't like about the radial arm saw, it takes a lot to keep it adjusted. You make a few cuts, get the saw jammed accidentally, or with me, I'm always running into the damn arm. Walking by, bam, oh, hello, knocking it out of a wax.
So then it's out of adjustment.
Realignment, and it takes a little bit to get it back square.
So it is... Who did that?
So it isn't John.
Oh.
All right.
Good night, Leroy.
And now a pause for the cause.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be back in just a minute with more of the Blind Handyman Show. Tom, put on the...
This is Steve Mazura.
It's Robin from the Aussie Kaleidoscope.
They're big on the air.
I'm Roger Cool,
the KJS Show.
Hi, this is Patrick Perdue from the
ACBRI DJs. Are hard at work creating personal web pages about their shows, the music they play, and even a bit about themselves. Now we're accumulating these web pages into the ACB Radio Interactive Broadcasters Web Ring, where you can learn more about the personalities behind the microphone. Go to www.acbradio.org, then choose the interactive link. From there, you can choose the link that will take you to the ACB Radio Interactive Broadcasters Web Ring.
Latest breaking news stories, visit the ACB Radio Newsroom at www.acbradio.org. All the news, all the time. From the world's leading news organizations like CNN, the BBC, the New York Times, the Toronto Star, the Wall Street Journal, and more. That's all the news, all the time, in the ACB Radio Newsroom at www.acbradio.org.
ACB Radio Mainstream, now delivered live to your phone in the UK using phoneanything.com. The internet over the phone. www.phoneanything.com. You are listening to the Blind Handyman on the ACB Radio Mainstream, the talk of the blind community. Our email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com. If you would like to be part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now, here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
Well, we'll have to give credit where credit is due. We were recording this on a Monday, on a Tuesday, which is the day the Blind Handyman temporarily is on. It's going to be moved pretty soon or off. I don't know which one. But is that good or not? I haven't decided which one.
People can read through the line.
That's right. So we were trying to get that. We wanted to know if we were on. We usually go check. And so I went in and bought my computer, took it off standby, and went to ACB. Couldn't do it. Couldn't figure out how to do it. Patterson came in, spent about 15, 20 minutes in there looking at it, went upstairs to look at Lou Ann's computer. Kevin Doucet walked in and put it on.
Yeah, what a deal, man.
What a guy, Kevin. Should give you a little
life-saver
credit.
Thank you.
Probably his secret agent for the ACB.
My mother's name.
Probably.
Give his email address. And Kevin, you should be doing a computer. Somebody should be doing a computer call-in show on ACB Radio where people could call in and talk about their computer problems, and you could help them solve it. You should be doing that.
Appreciate that.
Solving this problem.
Try to get Snowbarger to do it. He wouldn't.
He could handle it.
He could, couldn't he?
Yeah.
You'd be good at it. And you, I think we've talked about this before. You have a little vending company, Kevin, is that right?
Yes, sir. Vending right there in Alabama.
And you go around and service these machines and make sure that they have, what is in your machines? Candy?
We have, chips and different varieties of chips and candies and crackers and cookies. And
coffee.
Yes, we have coffee.
You do have coffee, huh?
Yeah, yes.
Well, that's pretty neat. And Charles, kind of thinking about maybe getting into that sort of thing.
Looking into it a bit, so to speak.
Well, I guess we could read our little article. This article appeared, I guess most of you probably read this, but I want this to give me a chance to rail and raise hell.
Yeah.
It's just senseless as far as I'm concerned. This is an article about Is it the Illinois State? Why don't we read the article, then we'll just talk about it.
Okay. Not wanting to make their patrons wait another 5 to 8 years to enjoy current popular titles and copyright-secure audio formats and CD audio quality, the Mid-Illinois Talking Book Center in Pekin, Illinois, has launched an innovative pilot program to distribute e-audio digital talking books to its patrons. Now, the technology is already here and is being enjoyed by thousands of sighted readers. Librarian Lori Bell, why make our blind and visually impaired patrons wait for more testing and evaluation to enjoy it? With the launch of this service in January 2003, MITBC became one of the first talking book centers in the country to offer digital audiobooks to its readers through Audible.com. The e-audio project, established in honor and memory of its former director, Eileen Shepherd Meyer, involves the loan of a very tiny MP3-like player, the Audible Otis, that has been loaded with 2 to 3 full-length, unabridged, premium spoken audio books, not read by a speech synthesizer, selected by the patron from the library's special collection of audio books.
Really?
Now, the player has 64 megs of built-in memory, which allows for approximately 20 hours of reading time. Goodness.
Wow. Really?
No cassettes or CDs. The package provided each reader. What is that?
That's a train.
That is a big train.
Boy, I'm telling you, I thought I was playing something here.
The aliens are coming.
That's the train.
Well, the library patron will use the digital player for 2 weeks and will return it by mail to the library for use by another patron. Uh-huh. Project participants need not be computer literate to participate in the project. At the close of the pilot program in June 2003, Tom Peters, a national e-book expert, will write an evaluation report on the project and the experiences of the readers who participated. MITBC staff will then decide if or how the project and service will be continued. The source of the audiobooks is Audible.com. That's a private company and the Internet's leading provider of digital downloadable audiobooks. Its services are available to individuals, public and private libraries, and K-12 school libraries on a fee-paying basis. The books can be downloaded and read from one's hard drive, copied to a CD, or transferred to the Audible Otis MP3 player. There are a number of plans to fit individual budgets. Audible.com has experienced a significant increase in the adoption of its program by sighted and visual, or rather vision-impaired listeners who appreciate having access to new releases and best-selling audiobooks as soon as they are commercially available. As a growing number of blind and vision-impaired people are subscribing to the commercial service, Audible.com is doing everything possible to enhance the accessibility of its service, including the posting of ACB Radio Director Jonathan Mosen's excellent tutorial, which aired last year on acbradio.org's main menu.
Uh-huh.
As a rapidly growing number of visually impaired readers are using and enjoying the Audible.com service, an electronic user group has been established. You can join by going to http://groups.yahoo.com/group/blind-audible-listeners/. How very fortunate readers are if they live in the area served by the Mid-Illinois Talking Book Center. But for those whose libraries have not yet caught the vision, just go to www.audible.com. There you will find more than 18,000 well-narrated talking books waiting for you.
Now, that figure was 18,000.
Yeah, that's 18,000.
18,000
yes.
Books.
Yes, indeed.
Unreal.
That some person that Audible has already had somebody read 18,000 books. They're not read by synthesizer. They're read by readers.
But several readers, huh?
Well,
a group of readers.
One of my favorite talking book readers is Suzanne Torrance, and she reads some of them for them.
Really?
She does some work for them also. She's a very good reader. I don't know her, but she does real well.
So they have some good quality readers that read for
they're
them.
They're fine. They're wonderful. I mean, you've read 3 books from Audible.
I did, and they were good. They were great.
And the readers are good? I mean, these books have got 18,000 books. I don't know how. I don't have any idea how much.
Unreal.
How many books APH has? I have no idea how many they've recorded.
I believe I saw a figure one time. I've done some research, and it's upwards of 300,000+, maybe 400,000 books. I believe so
that's a lot of books.
It is a lot of books.
It's going to take them a long time to get those books transferred into digital form, and I'm sure I'm sure they are working on that even as we speak. But why can I not go to APH, that go to their website, and download me a book now? I mean, why are we What are we waiting on?
There's
what
no is reason the, not to be able
what
to
What is the problem? You know they have books. You know they've been recording digitally for probably several years. I mean, they're not sitting there with
their thumb. Oh, well, never mind. With their thumb.
All of them.
Never mind.
All right.
But you, I wonder,
stop that.
I wonder if this has anything to do, though, really, with, like, their association with the Library of Congress. I mean, is that where the snafu, is that where the lag is? Like, Audible being a private company, you know, and they actually have paying subscribers. I mean, I know APH, they just provide the recording service, right? Doesn't the federal government actually own the books or gets the free copyright, or do they?
I don't know.
Once we read,
you may know. You know, but why would that? I mean, what is that? What's the problem? If I prove I'm blind and I want to download books that they already have in a digital form, and I'm willing to buy myself, which I have already three, a little, I've got little Audible, what did we say they were?
The Otis?
No, it isn't the Otis. Mine is
Rio
600 player. I've got two or three of those. I think three. I bought those myself. They're really expensive, guys. They're $50 a piece.
Yeah.
They're really expensive things. They're a little bitty thing that'll fit in your pocket.
They are. Very small.
Drop it in your pocket. And they will. These don't hold as much as the Otis, but they'll hold 8 hours of material. You refresh them by, in other words, you've downloaded a book from Audible, you put it in your Audible playlist, and you start reading this book. You go to the menu bar and you go to transfer audio to Rio 600. It fills up your player with eight point something hours of audio. When you finish that audio, and by the way, if you stop it, if you're reading, you read an hour and 3 minutes, stop it, it'll know where your place is.
See, that's an excellent feature right
there. Now, you cannot jump forward a chapter or back, but then I'm reading for pleasure. I'm not reading for education. I can see how books would need to be marked up if you're reading for education, but just reading for pleasure. I mean, you can go forward fast, but you can't jump to the next chapter. But it remembers your place. When I finish that 8.5 hours, I go to my Audible. It remembers what it put in my player and will put the next section of my book in my player for me. It remembers that. It was $50. It attaches to a USB cable. Why can we not go download books from APH is what I'm asking. Will somebody in APH come on the show and answer that question for me? Hello? Come right in. I don't understand, and I would like. They're waiting for flashcards. Well, flashcard technology is here. Flashcards that size, but they're very expensive. Blind people are going to lose those flashcards like crazy. They're not going to be able to keep up with those flashcards.
Well, you know, just a book on CD-ROM wouldn't be bad that you could advance. I mean, you could do all books that way.
Just a book that was MP3, a pleasure reading book was MP3 on CD-ROM.
Or on the new DVDs, it could hold just a lot of books.
Oh, and then think of the savings, even as far as labor. There's no money changing hands, but with the post office, wouldn't they much rather deliver CDs probably than...
Well, if I went and downloaded a book, they don't have to deliver a thing.
They got no delivery cost inside the organization. You don't have the labor in there. Somebody pulling the book, returning the book, making sure the tapes are there, rewinding it if it needs to be.
That's true.
I think that's
a pet peeve of mine. I hate getting a book that hasn't been rewound. Come on, folks, rewind the books,
please.
I think that's probably the problem. We probably put a lot of people out of work if we actually are able to. But once again, that's the way I felt when I went to blind school. Not only am I blind, but I'm being punished for being blind.
Exactly.
Doesn't make any sense to me. You know, I want to be able to go download books. So, I'm on Audible, and it's costing me $240 a year because APH refuses to let us download books. They're going to take me off the list, but I don't shut up, ain't they, gang? He said he's building more books because he's a malcontent. We don't like him. Yes. All right. Well, that's enough of that. I got my chance. Hey, just.
All right. Somebody get that soapbox.
Irks the hell out of me. You get that soapbox. I just kicked it. I just don't. I don't understand. Of course, there's a lot of things. People know me. Know there's a lot of things I don't understand.
Of course, Dan Rather will be here next week.
Yeah, I'm sure he will.
Yeah. Our upcoming interview with Diane Sawyer. I'm sure you can touch that point.
Oh yeah.
Right,
man. But good
60
things.
60 minutes.
But good things happen in this world. CNN took Connie Chung off, which thrilled me.
Yay!
Jesus, she was lousy. She was awful. I mean, she just couldn't do an interview. She'd ask the question by answering it. You know, how she got as far as she... Well, you know...
Somebody grab that soapbox. He's still got it.
I still got it. All right,
one
else?
Time they accused Barbara Walters of sleeping around to get her job. She said if she had it, wouldn't have took her as long to get the job.
I don't know now. I used to have my eyesight. I've seen Barbara Walters.
Well, Barbara Walters was not a bad-looking lady in her day, I think. But,
well, how much time we got? What time is it? What
lots
are we doing?
Of time, man.
Plenty of time.
Oh, we still have time to attack the Commission for the Blind.
Might as well start with them.
I guess we ought to talk about some handyman stuff. Anybody got a project they want to tell us about? Anybody?
Well, y'all, I guess, step right up here.
We could kill this show right now, I guess, when you play a lot of bumper music.
I mean, Kelsey is holding up her paw over there.
Right.
Front
I do have
center, this.
There,
huh?
No email?
We don't have any email.
Not
nobody
this
loves
way.
Us. Nobody loves us.
I have a small concern that I bet you guys can help me solve.
Oh, we need your help right now.
Once again.
In our bathroom, we have this towel rack just right outside of the shower stall.
Uh-huh.
And it's one of these rings...
Uh-huh.
And it is starting to come loose from the holder.
Ooh,
I cannot find where the dadgum screws are to take anything off.
I can tell you.
Please.
I think I can, too. Go ahead, Pat.
Underneath the bottom, or either on top, depending on how it was put out, but probably under the bottom is a very small, could even be an Allen screw up in that. You have a metal cover over the, where you know, that the ring's attached to. It looks like it's mounted to the wall.
I think it is plastic.
Yeah. All are plastic. But down underneath it, if you were facing that ring, just feel the edge that would be facing the floor. Up
right.
Under there someplace.
There's a little screw there.
There's a little bitty screw there.
Okay.
And you take that off, and then you'll expose probably two bolts or screws, and you're probably not in an anchor. They were probably into just the sheetrock or something.
Yeah.
And if they're just in the sheetrock, you may just be able to tighten them up. You actually may be able to just tighten those screws up and then put this thing back on. If not, you got to go. Do you know how these aren't really called molly bolts. They're called fasteners. They're sheetrock fasteners, aren't they? Those that flare out on the end. Do you know how those work, Kevin?
Yeah, yeah.
Or they make even little plastic anchors now. You know, if you're and you can get them according to what size hole you have, get a little bigger one and you tap it in with a hammer, and then the screw will screw right. It just will grab that sheetrock, and the screw will screw right in it.
Yeah. So I may not have to replace the whole thing then.
No,
should not have to.
And I shouldn't have to grab onto it and swing on it to try to pull it off the wall like I've been doing.
No, don't do that. You're going to rip a hole in that sheetrock, and Debbie's going to kill you.
But once again, my wife was correct. She said, "Don't do that."
Correct again.
And your wife says, "Don't do it, big boy. You need to learn not to do things when your wife."
Yeah, I had such an experience with a towel rack looking for the same thing, and that's I finally after I yanked it off the wall in a fit of anger, I found the little thing, and I said, "You know, so."
Yeah.
I spent my day that day patching sheetrock and then repainting and then reinstalling.
Well, you're good at that though, aren't you?
I mean, I can do sheetrock. Yeah, I can patch. Sheetrock.
You're a good sheetrock patcher.
Yeah. But. That's how I learned.
We've reached a point in the show.
Anything
That's
else?
The worst show we've ever...
anything else, Kevin?
Do you have any guests?
Make
up some problems. Let's take a break and decide what we're going to do here. We'll be back in just a minute with more exciting talk on the Blind Handyman. I'm going to go to APH and download a book while we're...
ACB Radio Mainstream.
The Cafe.
ACB Radio Treasure Trove.
You can hear.
Live.
On the ACB Radio Interactive.
ACB Radio Interactive. Playing music from
the 1930s and 40s.
The 50s and 60s.
The 1970s.
80s and 90s.
The hits of the new millennium.
ACB Radio Interactive comes to you from at least six time zones on three continents, bringing you the very best of
country,
top 40,
classic and modern rock,
new age,
folk,
the rare stuff out of the 50s,
jazz,
easy listening adult contemporary,
and more.
Live, unpredictable internet radio.
ACB Radio Interactive.
Don't risk the disappointment of missing a great ACB radio program. Join our announcements list today. Receive email about upcoming programs on all our channels and new features. To join, send a blank email now to announce-subscribe at acbradio.org.
That's announce-subscribe at acbradio.org.
Or visit our website. Announcements about ACB radio delivered to you direct and free. Just another way to stay in touch with ACB radio. Hang out with other ACB radio listeners. Talk with the hosts. Provide suggestions about the future of ACB radio. It's all possible through the ACB radio friends list.
Thank you for being a friend.
Log on and sign up now. Send a blank message to friends-subscribe at acbradio.org. That's friends-subscribe at acbradio.org. And thank you for being a friend of ACB radio.
Is the Blind Handyman on ACB Radio Mainstream. Be sure and tell a friend about the program and email us often, blindhandyman@hotmail.com.
Okay.
Now, here is more of the show with Don Shaw.
Look out there.
All right. One thing on the list that's been discussed here some lately is in woodworking, mortise and tenon joints. And it's just a good, strong, just a stout way to hold together some boards that, some projects that you're building, two boards that you want to hold together. It's just a good way to go about, a strong way to go about holding these boards together. And Dale, as a matter of fact, who happens to be sitting right here with us,
is a mortise and tenon expert
here.
Yeah, so I've cut a few of those bad boys.
He is going to talk to us some about that.
You probably met guys who were, anyway. I think I know what they are, but I don't exactly. Just start from scratch and tell us exactly what they, how they work.
Yeah, basically a mortise and tenon joint is kind of like a joint that will allow a piece of wood to fit into another piece of wood. As if you were, let's say, building a coffee table, for instance, and you wanted the rail that runs below the tabletop between all four legs.
Okay.
There's several ways you can attach that. You can attach it with a butt joint and some screws, which will hold, but it's not too strong. You can use dowel pins. There's various ways you can do it. But a mortise and tenon joint really helps. It's
and we
very
want the,
strong, and they fit inside of each other. So
we want this to fit in the leg, the rail to fit in the leg.
Right.
Okay.
So if you're, there's a couple ways you can cut them. For those of us that are lucky enough to have a mortising tool, which is basically like a drill press, except it uses mortising drill bits, which are a square chisel with a drill bit inside. So
and
when you activate it, the drill bit drills a hole, and then the chisel comes and punches
square
out the remaining area to make it square.
Where does one, can you use a regular drill press with those?
Yeah, you sure can. They have different brands of drill presses will have mortising jigs or attachments that will fit into the head.
There you
and
go,
then you
Bill.
Buy special bits that will allow them to drill. You know, and my experience, by the time you buy the jig and some bits, jigs run anywhere from $40 to $100, depending on the brand of drill press you have. And then the drill bits themselves will run, you can buy a cheap kit, you know, maybe $7 or $8 a bit. Better bits, of course, the better the bit, the sharper it is, the longer it's going to last, up to $15 to $20 a piece. And they run in sizes from 1/4 inch up to 1 inch.
And this actually drills a square type of hole, or
right. What it'll do is when it punches the hole out, it's like using a drill bit, but instead of getting a round hole, you end up getting a square hole.
Man, it seems like that would really jerk that wood around, doesn't it?
Not really. The drill bit goes in first and penetrates and cuts the hole.
Okay.
And then the chisel part, as you continue to pull the drill press down, it actually impairs it, impels itself into the wood.
Yeah, actually,
and just chisels out, cuts out the remaining area to make it a square
cut. I've never seen one. Go ahead, Pat. One.
No, I was saying, is not the whole thing is turning, or just the drill bit?
Just the drill bit.
Yeah,
is turning.
And so the chisel actually stays.
The chisel
stationary,
attachment's actually stationary.
Square frame.
Fixed. Yeah. Right. So if you were using, say, if you had a 3-inch rail you were wanting to put, you could. Hook up your, say if the piece is 3 inches by a half inch, you could do it a couple ways. You could put your half inch mortising bit in and just continue down the length of wood until you cut an area 3 inches long.
Oh, that'd be neat.
So you would move the wood down the drill press.
Right. Make a cut, move the wood, make another cut, move the wood. Yeah, it'd be a little redundant, but the strength of the joint you would get is incredible.
You would set the drill press depth. That it wouldn't keep, I know you can do that on my drill press, so that it wouldn't keep on going down.
Set your depth so every cut you make is the same. Also, put a fence behind the area, and you could just, in fact, set it up beforehand against the fence, put a stop up so that you knew you could just keep moving the leg at any interval. It wouldn't have to be a half-inch interval every time.
Okay, but this is the cheap way to do it. That's what you're at, right? This is the least expensive way.
Right. And then, if you wanted to go another way, you could actually go and actually cut a tenon. Using this way, if you cut the mortise the same thickness as the rail that you're inserting into it, you wouldn't have to cut a tenon on the end of the rail. Oh. And basically, a tenon is just removing excess material around the part of the joint that you want to insert into the mortise.
Kind of the opposite.
Yeah. Right. Now, the mortise is the hole that the tenon goes in. Is that
correct?
Right?
The mortise is what you would make if you were using the mortising jig, drilling out and chiseling out that area. And the tenon is the part that slips into it. Tongue-in-cheek type joint.
Is there not a table, like a router table, that will do this?
Sure. A router table would do it. If you can use a router as well instead of a mortising jig and insert a... The one thing with using a router bit, of course, it's round. Uh-huh. So after you make your initial cut, you'll cut the width and the height, but you'll either have to do one of two things. Go back in and chisel out the area at the top and bottom of the mortise to make it square, or round over by sanding, using, a router, using any means of shaping the tenon that you're going to slide into the mortise to where it's rounded over at the top and bottom to match the...
But everybody who's making a mortise... doesn't use the drill press and drill 50 holes.
No.
I mean, there's a better way to do it.
If you had the perfect scenario, you'd have the mortising bit or the mortising, the tabletop machine, and then the router, and you could cut the top and the bottom plug for the mortise and then take it to the router and use the router bit to shave out the rest of it. So you wouldn't, if you were making a 3-inch piece, you'd probably have to drill, at least 6 or 7 holes.
Sure you would.
But using the router, you drill two, to one at top, one at the bottom, and then take it to the router, slap it through there, and you remove that material.
Yeah, yeah, which would be excellent.
And then the tenon, basically, say if you have, again, you've got that piece that's a half inch thick. If you wanted to make a tenon a quarter inch by, instead of 3 inches, by 2.5 inches, which would be the tongue that would slide into the mortise, just set it up on the table saw and shave off an eighth of an inch on each side. And that would bring it down to the quarter inch, and then
that'd be tricky. Yeah.
It's a few cuts.
Now that would be pretty
very,
tricky to
very
do.
Strong, and depending on the size of the wood you're using, sometimes it's more trouble. Say if you're using 1x2s or 2x4s or something, it'd be easier to cut a tongue, and then cut a smaller mortise than it would be to cut the entire mortise. If you were putting a 2x4 in, you'd need an inch and a half thick. Inch and a half wide mortise by whatever the length of the board is that you were using.
Yeah.
Or how about this tool we talked about from Sears or wherever that you could buy that?
Right. The benchtop mortiser. It's basically just like a drill press, or a tabletop drill press, except it is set up to do nothing but mortising. And then they have bits available where the bit sizes are anywhere from a quarter inch up to, I've seen as big as an inch and a half.
Really?
Now, in that tabletop model like that, would you move your wood and the bit
stay
stationary?
Yeah, you still have to set your fence. Yeah, the bit would stay stationary.
Okay.
And basically, that'd be the same thing. If depending on how big of the mortise that you wanted to cut, you'd have to keep moving it for the bit size until you carved out all
but
that
But you can't
area.
Slide it. You'd have to drill a hole and move it down and drill another
hole.
You
pull it out, slide it, drill it out.
There's no way to just slide it alone.
No, not with this tool. Because, again, this tool is a drill bit going down, and then a chisel sleeve coming down and popping out, basically cutting out the remaining area of the circle that's not cut out. It'd be like having a square and then drawing a circle inside it.
I've got
the drill bit will remove the
I've never
material
seen
of the
these.
Circle, and then the chisel will remove the square area. So just depending on how you're wanting to do it, I've seen some people even do it with dado blades. They cut down through the where they want the mortise and cut it out and then come back in with a blind or hidden tenon to fit into the mortise.
You could do it with a dado blade. There's no question about that.
A lot of it you need to take in consideration if you want to cut one of these, what you're building, the strength of the joint that it needs to be, and how you're going to fasten it. So I made a coffee table where the legs were 1.5 by 1.5 inches and, about 18 inches long, and the little rails were 2.5 inches by about 19 inches long, so it wasn't that big of a table. There wasn't a lot of strength, so I just simply, used screws, countersunk the screws and went through the material and screwed the rails in, because that was a lot easier and a lot quicker job, and it didn't require something that was going to be, wasn't something that was going to be pounded on or laid on or set on or have a lot of weight on.
But with the dado blade, you say these rails were how thick? 1.5 inches?
Yeah, or say if you were, going back to the half-inch wide, example, you could put your dado blades in at 1.5 inches, and being that it's 3 inches long, you would have to do a little figuring, but you would want to set a stop block to where you could slide your leg in,
and it would stop.
At 3 inches or 2 3/4.
But you could make a perfect mortise that way. I mean, that would be the way to do it.
Yeah.
And then if you needed to, you could come back and go back to your mortising jig and remove that little area that the saw blades didn't remove, with the roundness of the blade. Because when you slide it in, of course, it's not going to cut out all the material.
That's right. You'd have the roundness of the blade would leave
a little bit of area. You'd need to do a little finishing, but I remember back in high school when we had to make these, we had to make them with a chisel and a mallet.
That'd be the tough way to make it.
It was fun. It was very, and you were, of course, graded on how tight it was and this, that, and the other. Now, one boy in our class, he used a lot of glue to make his nice and tight.
Well, of course, that's what you'd do. You'd fill this mortise, put glue in this mortise, and stick the tenon in there.
And stick the tenon in. And a good, our friend on the Yankee Workshop, now he's got all the cool tools and everything. And, it fits nice, tight, and snug every time. But I've even seen miter gauges for table saws that are made nothing but for cutting these mortises or these tongues.
So if it's just a little bit too large, it
has micro adjustments to where, you don't have to worry about moving it too much and making the cut to where, once it's cut too small, they don't make wood stretchers.
Yeah.
So once it's too small, it's time to get another piece and start over. But with these micro adjustments, you can really just trim it down to where it is a perfect fit.
And these things are basically pretty much blind friendly.
Yeah, very very blind. It's all feel, of course, but you have to play with it a little bit. But spinning that mic, that little button, if you will, it's just like turning the volume up on a radio or something. It doesn't move the block or your stop block very far. And now a whole turn may move it 1/16 of an inch.
Uh-huh. Oh,
so
that's
you can,
neat.
It's just let me just move this a hair, make this a little bit tighter here.
Yeah.
Or if you have a lot of area to shave off, you can adjust it accordingly. But again, it's just getting it and playing with it and getting to know your tools.
And you see these types of joints every day. Because I got to where every place I go, I look at how they made the table. Every place I go, I look at, I feel around it. What are you doing? I'm looking to see if I can do this. See if I made this table. Because I've become very aware of woodworking, of putting things together with wood. I guess you all do the same thing.
Blind furniture building. Right.
My wife won't hardly take me to a furniture store anymore.
Really? Because you're looking, trying to see how they built things?
Kevin?
Now my wife, before we just started dating, she took me to look at some cabinets she wanted, and I was tearing them apart. They were prefab thrown together, and even the salesman and I got into it over it. So she ended up getting them, but she wasn't happy.
That's the first time she'd seen you in action.
She,
you told her
I'm going to take you anymore like this.
You told her how cheap those are.
Look at this, and Yeah, we looked at one cabinet. It was made out of pine. And she, well, what's wrong with pine? And I said, well, look. And I put my fingernail in it and ran it down. And, of course, it marred the wood. And I go, see, it's so soft that you can damage the wood so easily.
Uh-huh.
Oh. And then we went to the, you know, we started looking at this oak cabinet she wanted. And some of the, just the internal construction of the drawers was pretty rough. You know, it had small, like, I'd say quarter-inch material for the very bottom of the drawer. And this drawer was roughly about 5 feet wide and about 2 feet deep.
Goodness. Yeah.
So it didn't have a lot of support for what you would be putting in it, be it clothes or tapes or movies or whatever. Yeah, you'd end up having a little warping problem.
Mm-hmm.
I was pointing some of these deficiencies out to the salesman, and you know, we didn't see eye to eye. So
and so you left. So you left that store.
Well, we actually ended up. She liked the furniture, so we ended up buying it, but we didn't buy it from that salesman.
Yeah.
And again, some of it too was his fault. He wasn't a very good salesman. He tried to lay some stuff on me, like I was questioning the construction, and he told me that solid wood furniture was not made anymore. And I, you know, out of a solid oak or a solid cherry, you know, and he was referring to stuff being all like plywood veneer things. And I was like, there's solid wood furniture.
You'll pay dearly for it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
totally.
But
of course, after we get nuked by North Korea, it'll still be sitting here.
I guess that's true. But surely they make solid wood furniture.
Gallery furniture. In fact, we will sell you solid wood furniture.
Right.
Save you money to boot. Huh?
But, and if you buy it today, we deliver tonight.
We do, actually.
Yeah. Right.
That old boy.
Mac. He owes us a spot right here.
He does.
Yeah, really.
And he is online, galleryfurniture.com.
That old boy.
I didn't know that.
I will invoice him after the show.
David went down there.
Solid wood furniture, good quality furniture. One, just go look at a gallery at Ethan Allen.
Yeah.
Their stuff is very, very fine.
And very, very expensive.
Yes, it's pricey, but it's all solid wood. If they say it's cherry, it's, you know, it's cherry through and through.
Cherry, huh?
Yeah, you're not getting particle board or wafer board or anything with laminate over the top of it.
Yeah.
Well, being the kind of a cautious guy, I've never bought, and I guess I need to, a good piece of wood. I've never made anything out of any good wood. I've just made plywood stuff.
Well, you don't know what you've missed then.
It's fun. It's fun taking
get some good plywood, man, and start ripping it up.
Well, you know.
My supplier brings everything in, and it's all rough lumber. It's planed off. Now, the two faces are plain, but we've got bark hanging off of some of the pieces, and some of the pieces are rough, but it's...
Yeah.
Wonderful to take that one piece of lumber and turn it into a nightstand or a dressing mirror or something and have somebody touch it and feel it and just be blown away because of what it was made.
There's a knack to that, man. That's just...
Yeah. For everybody out there that's cabinet makers and furniture makers, wow. More power to you.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That is beautiful stuff.
It is.
I just never had the nerve to cut, you know, an $80 piece of wood. I've just never had, you know, I don't have that much nerve. I'm a junk guy. I don't mind, you know, anything I want, I go build, but I build stuff out of scraps. That's why we have such a big scrap pile under my workbench.
There is a big scrap
pile. It is a huge scrap pile.
It's
absolutely immense. But I keep, of course, we use some of it in fires. I know you're not supposed to burn treated wood, but we do it anyway.
Yeah, we've burned a stick or two of wood out here, haven't we?
We've taken both breaks?
Yes, we've had all our breaks.
Well, we have.
Well, we got 8 minutes, guys. 6 minutes. What are we going to talk about for 6 minutes? Pool cleaning? What have you done to your pool this year?
Pool maintenance.
Have you done any pool maintenance this year?
I've got a couple of things since the water is warming up in the old pool this year. We've had some discussion, I guess, about in the ground and above the ground pools, both on the list. And Dale, I know you've done some pool maintenance here too, but
sure have.
I was just thinking about maybe in the spring, and you know, you can. I'd recommend using you can get a lot of leaves out of your pool just if you have the long telescoping pool pole and just a good deep net. Not a leaf net for skimming leaves off the top of the pool.
But just a long, deep net.
Yeah, like a crab net or something.
Yeah.
You know, just a big, deep net. And a blind guy, you know, it's kind of like the blind guy in the acorn and all that. And, you know, you can drag a net along the bottom of the pool. Just walk alongside and drag the net along the bottom.
And you're going to get a lot of stuff.
And, man, you're just naturally going to get a lot of leaves off the bottom.
Well, if anybody has a swimming pool, and you think a lot of blind people do, and you've got your swimming pool won't clear up, you've chlorined it, you've done this, you've done that, and it won't clear up, it's time to change the sand.
Yeah.
And Don Shaw and I have both done sand changing, and it is no big deal. You think it's, don't call somebody, because this is something This is something you can do yourself.
Completely blind friendly. I did that last year, in fact.
I did mine last year, as a matter of fact. I did mine also last year, and I did it the first year. I think you may have helped me the first time I did mine.
It was Don Patterson that got into that little project.
Last year, I realized it needed changing, and I went and got sand and did it. I did it. It was a big project, but you can do it by yourself.
Depending on the kind of filter system you have, Phil has, I think, like a whole bunch of screws around the diameter of the filter.
Mine has probably 50 nuts and bolts around the top half of the filter. It's maybe this thing down maybe 18 inches of the filter. The top 18 inches of the filter dome comes off, and it's screwed on around with two little lips that fit together and make a very tight seal with about, I'd say, 50 or 60 nuts and bolts. And, of course, you just take those loose, take the wrench, the proper size wrench, and take those loose, and that whole thing fits off.
And I guess you'd want to tighten them back, clockwise, and just do around the circle. Different points around the circle before you really get down and tighten.
I put them all in and tighten them up just almost finger tight. I mean, almost just hand tight, And then I went around and tightened them a little more and a little more until I just kind of eased around. And it's like, I guess it would be the same thing as, was anything. You don't want to just tighten one real tight and then put the next one in.
That's not what you're liable to.
If you're going to start tightening them down, do like the 12 and 6 method. Do opposites. Do one side, do the opposite side, and then work your way around.
That's kind of what I did. I just tightened them finger tight, got them all where they were ready to be tightened, and then I just eased around, tightened them all a little more, and then all a little more, until I got them till it pulled that top down. But changing the sand, once you get it off, you just have to be very careful because there's radials down in there you can break.
Yep.
That can be broken. So I took a coffee can, just a little 1 pound coffee can, and dipped it out and just threw it on the ground.
That's what we
did. And then once you get way, way, way down in there, you're almost below the radials, just take your hand and scoop sand out and throw it. And it takes a little while, but I bet I got 99% of the sand out.
Oh, yeah, you can. You can get most of it out. And depending on the kind of filter you have, you say you use a coffee can.
Yeah.
When I do ours, I have to use a small paper plastic type disposable cup because we have one thing on the top of our filter that unscrews that's probably a little bit bigger around than your hand and arm, but you can get your hand and arm down in the filter, but you just unscrew one thing and stick your hand in your cup or whatever. It's a little slower, but yet it's easy when you take off and put back the top of the pump. It's quick.
So you wouldn't have near as much access as mine, but it would be quicker and easier.
But it's quicker and easier.
Take the old sand out, go to the pool store, buy the new sand, and when you put it in very slow because you don't want to just dump it in there. You'll break those radials.
That's right.
That are down in there. So you pour it in very slow.
I heard you should add a little water, actually, before
I think that's
you put
the trick.
In the sand.
Yeah, I think that's
so
the trick, is put some water in there so that it kind of breaks the fall of the sand. But this is a very doable project, so if you got a pool and it won't clear up, or your neighbor's got a pool that won't clear up, say, I tell you what I'll do, boy, for $50, I'll change your sand for you.
That's right.
Lucky being down here in the South.
Because
we don't have
to
winterize those pools. We don't
really
have to cover
them.
We're lucky there, man.
So it's a very, very doable
round. Heck, if you're stumbling on the way back to the house, you might go swimming in January. You never
know. Those kids asked me Thanksgiving, Pawpaw, can we go swimming? I said, I don't care what you do. And they didn't stay in long.
I bet they did.
They didn't stay in long.
Blue lips and all, huh?
But Pawpaw got points for being a nice Pawpaw.
You did your part.
Especially with Christmas coming. That's key.
Well, gentlemen, we got a roast in the oven. I want to go cut up an onion.
Put
it in the roast. Do what, Ken? What?
No, I was just going to say, before we forget to say it, this is show number 37, by the way.
Yes, it is.
And wow. It's a marker.
Watch that
here.
Email address, John.
We stumbled along. Go ahead, Donald. Give us email address.
That email, if you want to send us some mail, send to blindhandyman@hotmail.com.
And how about that list, sir?
And if you want to join that list, send to, what is that list name? That's Blind Handyman.
Subscribe.
At blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoo.com.
Right. YahooGroups.com.
YahooGroups.com.
Blind Handy Man, subscribe at YahooGroups.com, and that'll get you on the list, Patterson.
Okay.
Anytime you want to be on the list.
Anytime you want to do it, Patterson.
Fellas, I'd like to say thanks for a great weekend.
Well, thanks for coming.
It's been great. It has.
We've enjoyed having both of you gentlemen, and you've certainly classed up our blind retreat.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. We have been running around with our pinkies in the air, haven't we?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
I'd like to say to Candace, show 37, 3-7, baby. I love you very much.
It's been lots of fun.
Hi, Mom.
Let's go drink. What do you think?
I agree.
Yes. Thanks, well. Don Shaw. Thanks, Don Patterson. Yes. Thanks, Tom Houston.
Yes. Yeah.
We'll do it again next week. I see, said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw.
The Blind Handyman is produced for ACB Radio by Out of Market Productions, 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.